This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In advance of the August primary, Vermont Edition is running interviews with statewide candidates in contested races. Today, we hear the conversation that I had yesterday with Jasdeep Panu. Panu is an attorney who lives in Essex Junction. He's running in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate against Brooke Page, Rocky De La Fuente, and Lawrence Zupan. I started by asking Panu why he's running for Senate.
Well, I believe many reasons. First and foremost, our criminal law system is just fundamentally flawed. And it's, to me, it's almost just inexcusable that we continue to engage in this behavior of trying to put the square peg in the circular hole. The drug catastrophe is literally one of the most, it is the most wasteful, corrupt, and destructive acts that are going on in modern society. And we, for 50 years, have still not learned that it just is not working. And the reality for me is, this is why I started. I mean, since life, since a lot has changed, but, you know, I really do not want it anymore. We're spending $80 billion a year to house 1.2 million nonviolent drug offenders. And we don't have kids with books. We don't have appropriate play fields for children. We don't have infrastructure that's working. And somehow we give $4 billion to the Mexican police in the last 4 years, which is the same as giving to the cartels because we know they're so corrupt. But yet, you know, once again, our roads are not built. We don't have proper health care set up. So the myriad of reasons just kept continuing. And then, you know, the other part of, for me now is also I'm a very avid Second Amendment supporter. And once again, for everything for us flows from education. And the reason I support the Second Amendment is because of education. I don't believe that the gun violence that has occurred on these terrible incidences, it really goes back to us. What we ask for particularly the people, is to have a maternity leave for 2 years so we can start getting the communities back together and attachment in these formative years, so our kids are not having to have to be ripped apart from their parents because of monetary reasons mostly. And you cannot blame anybody for trying to make a living, but we need to do better to make sure our communities are respecting each other so we don't have these terrible incidences. And what really saddens me is that because people believe that I support the Second Amendment, that somehow I condone this terrible acts of violence everywhere, no matter where they were. And that is just not true.
Who believes that?
Well, there are people that will, the propaganda will make the Republican parties seem that we are in support of these vicious acts that's just inexcusable. We have never been that way. And nobody, you know, ever said that. And it's just been terrible the way it's portrayed. And the biggest part of me for the Second Amendment support as well is that, you know, it's not a state right and it's not a federal right. You know, it's an individual right. And that's what people really have to understand. And that's another reason I'm, you know, as a criminal defense attorney, one thing that's really has been a great issue for me with respect to the Second Amendment is I want to preserve the Second Amendment because I wish the Fourth Amendment had been preserved. I don't know. We have literally made an industry because we have made what is known as the Fourth Amendment exception. And to this day, I am simply baffled by the fact that we believe that our founding forefathers of Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Alexander Hamilton, Thomas Jefferson, these great intellectual men, for some reason, could not have articulated or promulgated the word exception. It endears me to think that a judge once at some time sat and said there's an exception. And these are the same gentlemen that wrote the Emoluments Clause. I mean, please tell me how they did not – if they wanted exception in there, they would have put it.
So let me ask you – let me get you to focus on what federal changes to firearms policies would you advocate for?
I – first and foremost, my method is to end the drug catastrophe. So let's just get that straight.
Okay, but you're talking about the Second Amendment. So are there any changes that you would make? And then I definitely want to talk about the drug policy.
Okay, so let's first say my approach is because I am now assuming that the black market guns are gone, okay? The black market guns are gone, and that's what would happen if you end the drug catastrophe. That's a huge, great starting point.
It's not. So you see them tied together, these two issues.
100%. So I believe if we can get the black market guns off, I don't want regulations. I don't think we need them because this percentage of somebody really going in and really committing an act because they somehow were able to obtain a gun, and people talk about – and I know there's you know, people with mental health issues and some people that have been determined to be needing full-time care, but those are under the Department of Mental Health, so they wouldn't be able to purchase anything most likely. But the reality is if you take the black market guns off, okay, you're going to reduce a great portion of the crimes that you're trying to get to. But the other part of that is, you know, we have to understand that gun shop owners, they're responsible people. And if somebody comes in and they know it's the local, you know, quote, unquote, crazy guy, they're not going to sell to him. I assure you. I have met gun shop owners all over Vermont. And let me tell you, in fact, they will ask if someone is suspicious. If someone comes in and wants to randomly buy 10 handguns, they won't sell it to them. So that's the other part that's just it's terrible is we eviscerate the great responsibilities that these gun shop owners really display for the community.
But it's not so much the gun shop owners. Some people who are worried about this are arguing it's what happens with the guns after. We have no registry. You can, if you're trading guns with whoever, it's not a gun shop owner who has to decide whether or not somebody should or should not purchase a gun. There's no chain of custody or no chain that ties anybody to a gun once it's been purchased.
So, you know, I think once again, we have to understand it's never the gun. It is always the trigger. Let us be clear that when someone has got into such a state of despondency and despair that they are willing to commit vicious acts onto themselves or other individuals, a gun will not be the difference. I mean, we can start now taking ID and background checks for chainsaws because let us not recall that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was based on a real story. I mean, it would never stop these gargantuan laws that have been put in, and they have zero effect. If we really want to cure the gun problem, we're not going to see the results today. We are going to see them in 20 years. And that starts, once again, with having these communities connected to each other and accepting responsibility. And what I think we've lost, I personally believe what I call the participation trophy era has not worked. I 100% these lack of responsibility, people just understanding that, you know what, life is not fair. And sometimes you lose, but you know what? It's okay. It's okay. And that's what people have to understand because we need to get this self-responsibility back because when we get the self-responsibility back, we will have self-respect. And when we have self-respect for ourselves, that will just emit to all our community members. And these acts will not happen. I truly believe that.
So we're about halfway through. So let me make sure I ask you. One of the main platforms that you're running on is to end what you call Prohibition 2 and to tax and regulate drugs, so marijuana, heroin, cocaine, and then to use the funds, the proceeds, the revenue from those taxes to fund other parts of government. So explain your position here.
So, you know, as I said, life is all about the journey. And so that has evolved a little bit. But I first and foremost, I just want to start with this, okay, that we once again, we spend, you know, $80 billion on these nonviolent drug offenses. But the reality is it's not about free or not free. We misuse money all over. As I said, the $4 billion to the Mexican police. We have grants that this is really what's, you know, it's really unhealthy. I feel that we give grants to police departments if they meet a quota of arrest. So as an, you know, for lack of a better description, we need to have an industry that's supposed to be based on merit, but it's based on monetary gain. That is fundamentally flawed. And as I've said before, another fundamental flaw with this issue is that we have a $30 million a year slave trade industry going, and we are literally losing children to the slave trade because we're chasing a drug dealer. I, for one, dude, I will not let that happen anymore.
So what's the policy? What would you do?
Okay. So the policy for me is simple. We would make the Child Trafficking Enforcement Agency replace the DEA. So the manpower, the personnel is there, but they are retrained to focus on what I believe is also a huge immigration issue, and which is, I believe, immigration is the one we really want to focus on are slave traders, because the bad immigrants are slave traders. And now, you know, I understand there might be other issues, but these are the core. This is how you call killing the larva. You don't kill random bugs. You go for the larva if you really want to erase the problem. And that's where we need to focus. What's going on at the border is terrible, but it is also a breeding ground for slave traders because they can easily pay off random individuals in these small communities, and they take these unfortunate children in this life of slavery. And it's just despairing to me that I, you know, a few weeks ago, I saw the cover of New York Post, and there was a building in the middle of Manhattan that was a slave ring for years. And yet, somehow, we didn't know about it for years. I mean, the community didn't know about it, but I know for a fact, if I take an educated guess, that there was probably heroin stings going on, marijuana stings. So it's not about ending the ending the drug catastrophe. It's not about that. It's about focus. Our priorities need to be focused. This slave trade is a real thing. It's going on in Vermont. Anybody thinks it's not, you're just not understanding fully, or you're putting your head in the sand.
So if you're eliminating the DEA in favor of creating...
I never said eliminate. I said retrain. 100% never said eliminate. We need to retrain.
Right, but
and
you're
rename.
Not. But they are not focused on drug enforcement.
Yes.
So it's essentially eliminating the DEA in favor of retraining those people into something that's child protection, child trafficking, and a protection.
Yes, and of course, you know, if.
But
they,
so then would that? But then would that require legalizing the drugs that currently the Drug Enforcement Administration is working on preventing? Like, would you legalize cocaine? Would you legalize heroin?
I mean, I personally believe we shouldn't leave that much money on the table. I mean, but for me, like I said, my priority is more deep. Okay, but I can tell you, even all my goals, I don't need anything anymore from what I had originally planned, because I just know the amount of gargantuan waste that goes on. I mean, I just know that I can build roads, bridges. I mean, I have a 1,000 bridges a year committee, and our goal, and the reason being that infrastructure recalls us. If we have good bridges, you have good roads. And if you have good roads and you have good schools and you have good hospitals, every community thrives. It's really simple stuff. But we lose focus because we give money to other countries and we give money to wildlife research, which is great, but we give to the point we are not building our own roads. I mean, we need to take care of our roads, our schools, because no matter the opportunities for any student, I mean, how difficult is it if they can't even – the road to the school is not even paved?
Let me ask you, because we're trying to get some understanding of how each of the candidates compare to one another. Would you support raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour?
Well, I think that I would do if there was a certain quota. I mean, if there's a certain number of employees in a certain company, because I know a lot of small time Vermont business owners that, you know, I actually thought of this at some point. But, it's true. If you're a small business and you have two or three employees, you can't pay everybody $15, $20. You just can't. But I think there's a number. We don't know the number. But I think, you know, I've always thought, I think, you know, if you can afford 500 employees, you should be paying $15 an hour. I mean, I personally feel that's like a number for me.
Jasdeep Panu, thank you very much for talking with us today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
I also asked Jasdeep Panu about an incident from 2009. He was found guilty of criminal contempt of court over his conduct in a trial where he represented a man accused of sexually assaulting a 13-year-old girl. Panu tried to introduce evidence of the victim's sexual activities after being barred from doing so by the judge under the state's rape shield law. Panu returned to the subject again when cross-examining a witness, and that resulted in his contempt charge. Panu still defends his actions.
But I'm not just some... bully trying to get a better result. I'm trying to do what I felt was correct.
That was Jasdeep Panu. He's running for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate against Brooke Page, Rocky De La Fuente, and Lawrence Zupan. We've already interviewed Brooke Page, and you can find that conversation at vpr.net.